Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I'm your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls everything right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. The Dallas Cowboys are no longer interested in winning Super Bowls. Jerry Jones no longer gives a rat's ass, a flying fuck, or two shits about winning a Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant. On the surface, it seems like Dallas and Jerry Jones and everybody involved in that whole situation down there legitimately wants to win a Super Bowl. That's the way they make it seem. That's the way it's portrayed. That's how it comes across. But based on their actions, most notably retaining head coach Mike McCarthy, despite the fact that he's been the head coach for the past three seasons, all 3 years they win 12 games. All 3 years they fail to make the NFC Championship game. And yet you retain this guy. You bring him back. Cowboys fans, covered in a wave of silver and blue melancholy, sitting there like patience on a monument, waiting for discipline to be handed down in the aftermath of that 48-32 public castration courtesy of the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it was during the game that people were talking about, is Mike McCarthy going to get fired? During the game, in the middle of the ass whooping, the speculation already escalating, the conversation, is Mike McCarthy going to get fired? And rightfully so. Consider the fact that every single year since 2021, Dallas is the same football team. Good regular season, get everybody's hopes up, beat up on shitty football teams, get to the playoffs, and get exposed for being an undisciplined, lazy, mismanaged football team that doesn't have the necessary components to compete for a championship. They're not good enough, and there's a lot of holes and shit they're missing. They can't run the ball. They give up big plays on defense. They commit stupid penalties. Star players such as Dak Prescott, Micah Parsons, turn up missing in the playoffs. MIA, milk carton status. Where were they? Dak is out there throwing picks. Micah Parsons might as well have been Casper Parsons. He was a ghost, a friendly ghost, against Green Bay in that playoff game. All this talk about Micah Parsons being the modern-day version of Lawrence Taylor, can we finally put that to bed? Can we finally end that conversation, please? I never want to hear that again. Don't ever tell me that Micah Parsons is the modern-day version of Lawrence Taylor. Until Micah Parsons goes on a football field coked out of his fucking mind and snaps somebody's leg in half, don't tell me that Micah Parsons is the next Lawrence Taylor. I don't want to hear that shit. Dallas is fraudulent, and the decision to retain Mike McCarthy says to me, we don't care about winning Super Bowls because we know we have a stupid, gullible, delusional fan base that buys into the hype and gets excited and gets their hopes up every year. As long as Dallas is competitive and like 8-3 or 9-2, 10-3, 10-4, 11-4, something like that, during the regular season, and all the Cowboys fans can go on social media and brag and gloat and be boastful, confident, saying it with all their chest, we them boys, it's our year, we're going all the way. The Cowboys are going to be Super Bowl champions and then go to the playoffs and get exposed, embarrassed, emasculated, and have to exit from the playoffs unceremoniously, just like they did last Sunday. And if Jerry Jones was serious about winning a Super Bowl, he would have fired Mike McCarthy, especially when you consider the coaches that are available. Bill Belichick is available. Jim Harbaugh is available. Pete Carroll, Mike Vrabel. All four of those coaches I just named have coached a team in a conference championship game or Super Bowls or both, obviously. Bill Belichick, six-time Super Bowl champion. Pete Carroll, Super Bowl champion. And a multiple-time national champion in college. Jim Harbaugh just won the college football playoff. and as the head coach of the 49ers, coached in three consecutive NFC Championship games. Mike Vrabel in Tennessee in 2019 led Tennessee to the AFC Championship. If Jerry Jones was serious about winning a Super Bowl, he would have fired Mike McCarthy. But Jerry knows it doesn't matter. We can win a Super Bowl or we can get beat in the wild card. Doesn't matter. Doesn't change a goddamn thing. Motherfuckers are still going to show up at Jerry World and pay $60 for a fucking pizza. They're still going to buy jerseys. Still going to be the most profitable team in the NFL. Still going to have the highest ratings. Still going to be talked about incessantly on ESPN and Fox. It doesn't matter. The Dallas Cowboys don't even need to win a Super Bowl. Jerry Jones figured this out. Jerry Jones no longer cares. And that's why Mike McCarthy is still the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. In other coaching news, two brothers got a job this week, or got jobs this week. Gerard Mayo, the new head coach of the New England Patriots, the successor to the legendary Bill Belichick, the GOAT of head coaches. And then the Raiders finally made a smart decision. Mark Davis listened to his players, his fan base, did the right thing, and retained interim head coach Antonio Pierce. Congratulations, my brother. 5-4 in an interim capacity as the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders following the firing of the abysmal and grossly overrated Josh McDaniels. The Raiders were a completely different football team under Pierce than they were previously under McDaniels. The defense was especially reinvigorated. The team in general as a whole was different. They played better football. You think about that Thursday night Amazon game at home against the Chargers. They win that game 63-21. They scored 63 points in a football game. That's video game numbers. That's crazy. Then you think about Christmas Day. They go into Arrowhead Stadium and beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Despite the fact that quarterback Aiden O'Connell was the drizzling shits in that game, he had about 62 yards passing the whole game. They get a pick six, they get a fumble recovery, scoop and score, touchdown, and they beat Kansas City on the road at Arrowhead. He lit a fire under that football team. You think about the locker room celebrations. You think about the star players on that team that went public in their support. Max Crosby, the star edge rusher for the Raiders, even went as far as saying, I might ask for a trade if you don't bring back Antonio Pierce to be the head coach of this football team. Good for the Raiders that they learned their lesson from what happened with Rich Bisaccia. The last time they had an interim coach that came in, did a hell of a job, won football games. He supplanted John Gruden, who got fired because of emails and shit off the field. And Bisaccia put together a good record and took that team to the playoffs. They lost a controversial game at Cincinnati, and then Bisaccia was fired. And they bring in Josh McDaniels, thinking they're going to recreate that whole Patriot mystique in Las Vegas. They found out that whole Patriot mystique was bullshit. The Patriot mystique was Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. That's why Belichick was unsuccessful without Brady, and that's why Josh McDaniels has crashed and burned several times without Tom Brady being his quarterback. The Patriot mystique is bullshit. The Patriot mystique is only existent in Tom fucking Brady. Speaking of the Patriots, the aforementioned Gerard Mayo, former linebacker for New England, most recently an assistant coach, defensive coordinator for the Patriots, and it was rumored for a long time that if and when Belichick steps down, his successor is going to be Gerard Mayo, and Robert Kraft followed through on that. And Gerard Mayo, congratulations, you are the new head coach of the New England Patriots. I'm going to pray for you, though, brother. I'm going to pray for you. A black man being a head coach of the Patriots following Bill Belichick? That sounds like a risky proposition. All it's going to take is for New England to go on a three-game losing streak, for Patriots fans to be online bitching, crying, and complaining about that Monday that can't win football games as the coach of the Patriots. And for those of you who don't know, when I say a Monday, I remember a white guy in the Navy from Boston, Massachusetts, telling me one day that white people in Boston and all throughout Massachusetts refer to black people as Mondays. And I said, why is that? He told me, because everybody hates Monday. So that's why they call black folks in Massachusetts Mondays, because everybody hates Monday. But good luck, Gerard Mayo. Congratulations on a new job. Same thing for Antonio Pierce. One last note about Antonio Pierce. When I talked about the defense being better, the defense gave up 16 points per game, 30 sacks, 4 defensive touchdowns, 31 penalties, the fewest in the NFL, and had a plus 62 point differential under interim head coach Antonio Pierce, who has now been promoted to full-time head coach. Congratulations and good luck. Always good to see black people get jobs. And speaking of the Raiders, let's talk about some disrespect. Former Las Vegas Oakland Raider executive Amy Trask went on a radio show, her podcast called What's the Football, a podcast that she co-hosts with longtime sportscaster Susie Schuster. And she has some incendiary remarks to make about my quarterback, Brock Purdy, the latest participant in the continued ongoing vitriolic onslaught and character assassination of the leader of the youth choir at the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints, part-time busboy at Outback Steakhouse, and quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, Brock Purdy, the latest person to talk shit about my goddamn quarterback. This person, Amy Trask, former executive for the Raiders from 1997 to 2013, went on her podcast and said, and I quote, "We have 7 terrific quarterbacks and Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy is a good quarterback. No mistake about it. Be calm, 49er fans. I simply don't put him in the same category as the other quarterbacks." And I quote. Now, when she said this, Amy Trask incurred the wrath of 49er fans looking for a bloodbath. Niner fans were pissed off about this shit, and rightfully so. She would then elaborate and go on to say, "It's not that I don't like him. He does things very well. He is surrounded by a tremendous, tremendous supporting cast on both offense and defense. He is a good quarterback." She would then go on local Bay Area radio station 95.7 The Game and say, "I think Brock is a great quarterback. He's surrounded by a tremendous cast. So when I say I think Baker Mayfield is doing more, it's because I think he's doing more with far less." Opinions like this are evidence that women shouldn't be allowed to talk about football. Go in the kitchen and make me a fucking sandwich. What are you talking about? Baker Mayfield is doing more with far less? He has Mike Evans. Mike Evans is a future first ballot pro football NFL Hall of Famer. Mike Evans catches 1,000 yards every season. Doesn't matter who's playing quarterback in Tampa. Jameis Winston, Tom Brady, Baker Mayfield, Ryan Fitzpatrick, doesn't fucking matter. Fill in the blank quarterback playing for Tampa Bay is going to help Mike Evans get 1,000 yards every single year. You want to tell me that Baker's doing more with far less? Do you watch football or just skim through it? Why would you say something like that? To diminish a player of Mike Evans' stature is completely ridiculous. Chris Godwin is not a good football player? What do you mean Baker's doing more with far less? This lazy narrative that Brock Purdy is the only quarterback to benefit from having good teammates is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. When did this start? Why are quarterbacks being penalized for having good teammates? I've said it before, I'll say it again. We can go throughout NFL history and look at every great, legendary, iconic quarterback. And we can also look at the people they had around them, the surrounding parts, the complementary pieces, the running backs, the receivers, tight ends, offensive line, defensive line, coaches, secondary, linebackers, whoever. Name a legendary quarterback that won and had success for a long period of time and didn't have great teammates. Joe Montana had Jerry Rice, the greatest wide receiver of all time, Roger Craig, John Taylor, the late great Dwight Clark, Tom Rathman, Brent Jones, and had Bill Walsh calling plays for him. Then on defense, you got Ronnie Lott, Charles Haley, Bill Romanowski. You got great players on both sides of the football. He won 4 Super Bowls with those teammates. Terry Bradshaw in the 70s. You're handing off to Franco Harris. You got Lynn Swann, John Stallworth. You got Mike Webster under center. Defense, the Steel Curtain, Mean Joe Green, LC Greenwood, Mel Blunt, Jack Ham, Jack Lambert. Great players everywhere. When did this lazy-ass, stupid, nonsensical narrative start that a quarterback must be slandered for having good teammates? When did it start that we're going to downgrade and minimize a quarterback for being surrounded by talented people? Peyton Manning had Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, Brandon Stokely, and Tony Dungy as a head coach. Tom Brady's best season was 2007. He threw 50 touchdown passes, 22 of those to Randy Moss. It's just what it is. We can look at the other teams still in the playoffs. Josh Allen is a better quarterback because of Stephon Diggs. That's just what it is. Look at his numbers before Diggs got there and look at his numbers post Stephon Diggs' arrival in Buffalo. Lamar Jackson played better this season. Why? Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham. He has legitimate receivers now. He looks better because of it. Patrick Mahomes struggled this season. Why? His receivers are dog shit. They drop passes all the time. The Chiefs receivers could not catch COVID at a Trump rally. I just don't understand why Brock Purdy is always being penalized, minimized, diminished, whatever, because he's surrounded by good football players. Because every other quarterback that is successful from a team standpoint benefits from having good people around them. This man, Brock Purdy, this season threw for 4,280 passing yards, an NFL league-leading passer rating of 113, 31 touchdown passes, 11 picks. The 49er offense averaged 30 points per game this season. Brock Purdy did all that this season, and yet somebody that was involved in the process to draft Jamarcus Russell went on a fucking podcast and said he's not a very good quarterback. We have 7 terrific quarterbacks and Brock Purdy. The same person that was a CEO, an executive involved in the draft process to select Jamarcus Russell, went on a podcast and questioned the talents of Brock Purdy. Go in the kitchen and make me a fucking sandwich and stop talking about football because you don't know what you're talking about. That is conversational malpractice for somebody to even say something like that. The narrative is so stupid. The only reason people say that about Purdy, he's picked number 262. As a matter of fact, the 8 quarterbacks remaining, all first-round draft picks, except Brock Purdy, pick number 262. Mr. Irrelevant, literally the last pick in the NFL draft. And it's a disruption to the narrative. Potential damage to the status quo in the whole draft process. To see somebody like him be successful and thrive and make plays and help his team win and advance in the playoffs. Dare I say, get to a Super Bowl or even win a Super Bowl. Could you imagine that? You got people that dedicate their whole life to researching the NFL draft and looking at tape and film and studying prospects all year long, 365, 12 months of the year. That's all they do. Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Daniel Jeremiah, and then the bootleg armchair analyst. Everybody's got mock drafts out with like 7 or 8 different revisions of it. You got people that dedicate their whole life to this shit, and out of nowhere, the last pick in the draft, throws for over 4,000 yards, 31 touchdowns, 11 picks, quarterback rating 113, number one seed in the NFC. He's not supposed to do that. That's not supposed to happen. It's supposed to be the first round pick. We tried it. Trey Lance, it didn't work. Call it what it is. But what did work was pick number 262. But the status quo, the establishment, the TV networks, all the analysts, pundits, media, etc., they don't want this to happen. They can't stand it. It makes everybody look bad. How did he slip through the cracks? How come we didn't see him coming? All the first-round quarterbacks that came and went that we were told were going to be awesome, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, that entire 2021 NFL quarterback draft class, Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville isn't working. Zach Wilson in New York did not work. That was a catastrophic failure. Trey Lance, like I said, did not work. Mac Jones, Justin Fields is going to get traded by Chicago. And that really hasn't worked, obviously. Think about Kenny Pickett in Pittsburgh. He sucks. He's never been good. Name a great Kenny Pickett game. You can't. It doesn't exist. I don't know. I never seen one before. I've seen moments. I've seen a couple of throws here and there. But consistently, on a game-to-game, even in the same game, on a quarter-to-quarter basis, Kenny Pickett's not that good. Mason Rudolph was a better Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback than Kenny Pickett this season. Those are facts. So all these guys go in the first round, and everybody tells you, this guy's going to be the next big thing, the face of the franchise for the next 12 to 15 years, and they fall flat on their face, and then the last pick in the draft is awesome, and people can't explain it, and it fucks them up. It bothers them. They don't want to hear it. So now we got to create fake narratives and stupid angles and attack and slander somebody because we can't explain why they're so good. And it caught us off guard. And speaking of Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers, let's talk about the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. The 49ers and the Packers, Tampa Bay and Detroit, Kansas City and Buffalo, Baltimore and Houston. 8 teams remain. Only 4 will survive the weekend. I can't wait. Let's go ahead and start with the predictions. And, of course, begin with my team, the 49ers and the Packers, meeting in the playoffs for the 10th time ever. Signature franchises, landmark teams, historical relevance. 2 teams that both have good-looking uniforms. I appreciate the sartorial splendor of the game as well. Niners and Packers in the playoffs. It just makes sense. I grew up on this. I hate the fucking Green Bay Packers. I'll go ahead and say that right now. Other than Dallas, no other team pissed me off more growing up as a kid watching the 49ers play than the Green Bay Packers. I can't stand them fucking cheeseheads. Brett Favre committed welfare fraud. He's a complete douchebag. He was sending dick pics to a college co-ed. Mark Shimura is a pedophile. I can't stand the Green Bay Packers. Gilbert Brown's fat ass. Fuck that team. Could not stand those cheeseheads at all. 4 times the Green Bay Packers took out the 49ers in the playoffs. 1995, 96, 97, 2001. The Niners in recent years have finally gotten payback and revenge. 2012, 13, 19, and 21, a 4-game playoff winning streak for San Francisco versus Green Bay. I think it's going to continue. I think we make it 5 in a row. The biggest reason I say that, Green Bay's run defense, suspect, soft, not really there. Gotten better since week 15, but when you look at the entire season, they gave up over 200 yards rushing defensively 5 times this season. They had success stopping the run last week versus Dallas, but Tony Pollard is not Christian McCaffrey, and the Cowboys don't run it as effectively or as much as the 49ers do. It's going to be wet, inclement weather, high winds. The 49ers should absolutely come out running the football. Hopefully, this is not a game where Kyle comes out trying to prove a point like he did on Christmas versus Baltimore. Come out and run the football. This should be a Christian McCaffrey game. I don't think Green Bay can stop it. Green Bay defensively also struggles in the deep middle third of the field. Guess who usually has a lot of success in the deep middle third of the field? That would be Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk. Green Bay, Aaron Jones, a lot of success running the football versus Dallas last week. The Cowboys had 6 defensive backs on the field versus Green Bay playing 12 personnel, 1 running back and 2 tight ends. Completely nonsensical, completely ridiculous. You're not going to see that Saturday night in Santa Clara. The 49ers got Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. The Niners actually have linebackers. We can play the run. And oh, by the way, Eric Armstead is playing this week. Eric Armstead is usually a different dude in the playoffs. 9 career sacks in the playoffs for Eric Armstead. Our run defense is exponentially better whenever Armstead is on the field. So I don't see Aaron Jones going for 25 and a buck 18 this week. I think we're going to win the game. Obviously, I'll go ahead and admit my bias. I think Jordan Love is a phenomenal quarterback. I'm a fan of Jordan Love. I root for the brother. I've said this before. Other than Brock Purdy, he and CJ Stroud are my 2 favorite quarterbacks in the NFL. Young black quarterbacks that can play from the pocket. I appreciate Jordan Love and CJ Stroud. The Niners are definitely going to have to get pressure on Jordan Love, something that Dallas didn't do the entire game last week. Like I said earlier, Micah Parsons completely erased in that football game. 0 sacks on Jordan Love last week. We got to get pressure. Nick Bosa, Chase Young, Hargrave, Armstead, Cleveland Farrell not playing in this game. But we still got enough. We still have enough good pass rushers to get pressure with 4, drop 7 back in coverage. Charvarius Mooney Ward should be matched up against Romeo Doubs the entire game. The 49ers secondary this season had 22 interceptions, number 1 in the NFL. I just don't see a scenario where Green Bay wins this football game. I'll admit my bias, but I'm just saying, really, to me, the path is clear to a Super Bowl appearance for the 49ers. I picked them to go all the way this year. I picked San Francisco and Kansas City, and I'm still sticking with that. I think the 49ers win this game 27-19. 49ers 27, Green Bay 19, San Francisco moving on. Now, I will say this. There are 3 things in particular that do worry me, that give me concern about San Francisco going far in the playoffs. Offensive line, number 1. Other than Trent Williams and Aaron Banks, the 49ers' offensive line is suspect, especially on the right side. Colton McKivitz is a poor man's Mike McGlinchey, and that's fucking embarrassing. I worry about the offensive line. I worry about our safeties. Tashawn Gibson is old and usually commits a lot of penalties because he's too old and not that fast or athletic anymore. And then you got Jair Brown, a young guy, a rookie from Penn State, a guy I think has a bright future, but he's still learning right now. He still makes a lot of mistakes and still trying to figure things out. Both those guys could be susceptible to giving up big plays. So I do worry about that. Also, the Niner defense is still good, just not as good as it's been in recent seasons. The third thing I worry about, special teams, in particular, Jake Moody, the rookie kicker that we took in the 3rd round this year, has missed a lot of kicks this season. You think about that Rams game, could have won that game, even though it was only backups versus backups. But still, we lost that game 21-20, and Moody missed 2 kicks in that game. Also missed a potential game-winning field goal against Cleveland earlier this year. I worry about him in the playoffs. If we get in a close game, what is Jake Moody going to do? Is he going to be Robbie Gould or is he going to be Gary Anderson? So yeah, offensive line, safeties, and Jake Moody, the 3 things, if the 49ers lose and don't even reach the Super Bowl, I think it's going to be one of those reasons. The offensive line is going to fail us, or Moody's going to miss a kick, or the safeties are going to give up big plays in the passing game. But at the end of the day, I'd be shocked. I'd be absolutely baffled. Completely, well, I'd be devastated, number 1. but just blown away. Like it's hard to believe. It's unfathomable that the 49ers don't make the Super Bowl this season. I just don't see a way. With all due respect to Tampa, Detroit, and Green Bay, I just don't see a scenario where anybody represents the NFC other than the San Francisco 49ers. Speaking of the other NFC matchup, Tampa and Detroit, Tampa has weapons. Mike Evans, Godwin, Cade Otton at tight end. Trey Palmer caught a long touchdown pass last week. Running game not that great, somewhat one-dimensional. From Detroit's perspective, going to be tough to run the ball against Tampa. Vita Vea in the middle, big man, about 330 pounds, been stopping the run for a lot of years. A lot of weapons in Detroit. Goff, Jahmyr Gibbs, Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Laporta at tight end. I think overall, Detroit wins the game, slightly better football team. Are we really prepared to see Baker Mayfield in a conference championship? It could happen. There is a legitimate chance it could happen. I think it's going to be a close game, evenly matched, down to the wire. Tampa can make some big plays in the vertical passing game. Detroit's secondary is still suspect to me. If they don't get pressure up front with Aiden Hutchinson and company, I think it could be a long day. Mike Evans had a rough game against Philadelphia, a lot of drop passes. I don't see him doing that again. It's really tough to pick this game. Home field advantage in the playoffs matters. And for that reason, I'm going with Detroit. Close game, 33-31 against Tampa Bay. Even though the Buccaneers' defense has been better down the stretch, I think Detroit's offense can create some problems for them because they got so many weapons and they are versatile offensively. Detroit wins the football game because of home field advantage. The same reason I feel like Baltimore beats Houston, that game outdoors. I live in Maryland right now. We've been smacked in the face by Mother Nature. She must be on her period. Two snowstorms in 1 week. It's going to be inclement weather in Baltimore. A dome team in Houston coming in to play Baltimore. C.J. Stroud before the season said that if there was one thing he could change about the NFL, it would be that every team would play inside of a dome. He doesn't like playing outdoors, I guess. He doesn't like cold weather. Played in Columbus, Ohio for the Ohio State Buckeyes in college, but let's face it, college football season usually ends the last week in November. The bowl games are going to be typically in a dome or in some kind of warm weather climate like the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, something like that. So C.J. Stroud, not all that accustomed to playing outdoors in cold, wet, snowy, fucked up weather, rain, hail, sleet, ice, below 30, below 20, wind chill of 19, below zero. Who knows what the weather's going to be, but Houston not really accustomed to that. I think it's going to be a close game. Same thing I said about Detroit and Tampa. They played in week one. Baltimore won that game 25-9. That was C.J. Stroud's debut in the NFL. Had a rough day. Gotten better since then. Baltimore's defense, number one in the NFL. Defensively, the front seven, nasty, being led by Roquan Smith. Offensively, Lamar, the front runner for league MVP, most likely going to win it for the second time in his career. You talk about Gus Edwards in the running game, Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham. Mark Andrews came back to practice this week, will not play in the game. But I think, once again, the home field advantage, the cold, wet, inclement weather is going to be a deciding factor. I think Baltimore wins this game. Low scoring, I'm going to say Ravens 20, Texans 18. 20-18, Baltimore moves on to face the Kansas City Chiefs. I picked San Francisco with Kansas City in the Super Bowl. Not going to deviate, not going to give up on that pick. I think this is going to be the game of the weekend. It's usually a memorable affair whenever Kansas City and Buffalo in recent years step on the field together for a playoff game. Most notably, the game a couple of years ago at Arrowhead, 2021 divisional. Three lead changes in less than 1 minute. 13 seconds left to go in the game. Josh Allen walks off the field thinking he's about to go to the NFC Championship. No, his defense blew a lead with less than 13 seconds to go. It goes to overtime. Chiefs get the ball first, take it downfield. Mahomes, Kelce, touchdown, Chiefs advance. In the offseason, the fallout from this, the Buffalo Bills whined, bitched, complained, moaned, and got their way and initiated a brand new rule to be implemented into the NFL where, in overtime, both teams have to see the football. Because the Bills whined the entire offseason, so now, in overtime, both teams in the playoffs have possession of the football at least once. I hate the rule. I think, you know, Buffalo should have played better defense. That's my opinion on that. Don't give up a lead with less than 13 seconds to go. I don't like people that cry and complain about shit that they could have stopped. But I digress. But that was then. This is now. Played in the regular season, the Kadarius Toney offsides. As I said previously, he lined up in the fucking secondary. He might as well have been in the end zone already. He was clearly offsides. I don't know what Chiefs fans or Patrick Mahomes are complaining about. But as a result of that game, this game is in Buffalo, which means Mahomes got to go outside, got to travel for the first time in his NFL playoff career. I think the key to this game, Steve Spagnuolo's Chiefs defense versus Josh Allen. Joe Brady, Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator, and Josh Allen, that whole offense, if they can force Josh Allen into turnovers, which does happen, didn't happen against Pittsburgh. Josh is typically a better quarterback in the playoffs, but he does have a propensity to turn the football over. And if Kansas City can force him to give the ball up, I like their chances a lot better. The Chiefs' defense is very good. It's the best unit on that football team. And I think Mahomes in the playoffs is good enough to go on the road for the first time and win a playoff game. Joe Burrow walked into, what's it called nowadays, Highmark Stadium in Buffalo, whatever the fuck it's called, Orchard Park, call it that. That's where Marv Levy coached at. That's where Jim Kelly threw touchdown passes at. Andre Reed caught those touchdown passes. Thurman Thomas, Bruce Smith, Daryl Talley, Cornelius Bennett, Orchard Park, goddammit, fuck this Highmark shit. Whatever it's called, Mahomes goes in there and comes out victorious. I like Kansas City to reach the Super Bowl. So obviously they got to win a divisional round playoff game to get to the Super Bowl first. I like their chances. Even though I feel like it's a game Buffalo has to win because you finally got home field. A lot of Bills fans have been crying about that for years. Well, if we get Mahomes on our field, we can win. He's never had to come here for a playoff game. He's never played in Buffalo in front of fans. The one time Mahomes played in Buffalo was 2020, the pandemic season, nobody in attendance. He's never played in Buffalo in front of Bills Mafia. It's going to be insane. It's going to be crazy. But I think Kansas City wins anyway. I think Buffalo gets their heart broken one more time. Last second field goal could be something like that. Kansas City 30, Buffalo 29. So Chiefs, Ravens, AFC Championship, 49ers, Lions, NFC Championship. That's the way I see it going down. I could be wrong. I hope I'm not, especially as far as San Francisco goes. But that's the way the cookie crumbles, and that's the way I see it going down. So with all that being said, this concludes this edition of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. And remember, at all times, tread lightly like a woodpecker with a headache. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.